It's April Fool's Day, right now. And there's at least one minor joke on me. And this is a true story. After the newsletter came out, some people told me with brighter eyes than usual that they were really looking forward to my April 1st service, the one I called Fooling Around this year because of the day it happened. Now, I know that people like the annual humor sermon, but there seemed to be unusual overtones. And finally, it hit me. Fooling around. No, I had to tell them. I'm going to tell jokes, not talk about adultery. Either way, if you are new this morning, you might find it a little unusual. A church reading that's a joke. Almost every year, we here at the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship devote one Sunday to humor. It was my idea a long time ago. In fact, the first humor sermon I did was in seminary in a preaching class. And here's why we do it. In our church, in the face of the absolute truth that life is genuinely serious, in the face of our spiritual responsibility to reach out to each other in the many hard times that arise in our lives. We do it because laughing is part of the human response to tragedy, existing hand in glove with our tears. We do it because egos need to be put in perspective. And we do it because laughing binds us together in fellowship and joy, reminding us that the root of the word religion is religio, to bind together. Now, for the record, and a little parenthetically, I'm not dealing with sarcastic or demeaning humor in any of my remarks this morning. I would just assume that they got put in their correct category, which is a transparent attempt to dress up mean-spiritedness as innocent fun. Ha. Is there any tragedy harder for humans than most deaths? I am grieving two people just this week. And yet it doesn't disrespect those dear deceased if I laugh at Woody Allen when he says, "I don't have anything against dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens." Or when he says, "I don't want to achieve immortality through my work, I want to achieve it through not dying." And as for the human tendency to let our egos get inflated, well, one of religion's sacred responsibilities is to remind us that we have much to be humble about. It is bad for our souls to forget how little we know compared to mystery, to the universe, to everything. So you might have heard this one. It's about God and St. Peter having a conversation after God had commissioned St. Peter to take a survey to see how people were doing on earth. So God says, "Well, tell me, Peter, how are people doing down there?" "I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, but people are behaving in a really sinful manner. There's drugs and alcohol, murders, you name it. It's a regular Sodom and Gomorrah. But the worst of all is this obsession they have with practicing the act of procreation in other ways besides the one way that you have prescribed. According to my survey, it has reached epidemic proportions." So God goes, "Yeah, this is a pretty serious problem. Do you have any recommendations about how we could solve it?" Well, Peter, being a firm fellow, says, "I think we should send a message to every single person on earth who engages in this behavior, and the contents of the message should tell them exactly what will happen to them on Judgment Day if they keep this up." Well, God says, "That's an effective solution, but I'm a loving God, so I think instead of punishing those who practice those things, we should reward those who do it only as I have prescribed. Let's send a letter that's personally signed by me to each one of these good people." And so they did. And you know what they said in the letter? Oh, you didn't get it either? And here's another one that lifts up our tendency to think that we're smarter than others, that we can get away with things. This one's about four sophomores at a local university. They were chemistry students, they were A students, and they were very confident about the upcoming final. They were so confident that they decided to go visit friends up in, Moscow probably, and have a big party and not even worry about it. Well, the partying was so hearty that they actually didn't get back in time for the final. So they thought, okay, well, we'll go in the next day. So they did. They went in the next day and they said to their professor, you know, we were visiting a friend and we had a flat tire on the way back and we just couldn't make it for the final. And the professor said, that's all right, these things happen. You guys come in tomorrow and I'll give you a makeup final. It will be just fine. So, man, were they relieved. They went home, they studied hard for the test, and they came back in. So the professor gave each of them a test booklet and sent them to four separate rooms. They answered the first question for 5 points. It was great. Really easy question. Turned over to the next question, which was for 95 points. The question was, which tire? And how about us, Unitarian Universalists? For a long time, UUs have prided ourselves on our rationality. In fact, there's a person in the congregation this morning who came to us partly because one of his advisors at Boise State said, oh, the Unitarians, they just worship reason. And this person thought that sounded good. So they came. But we have prided ourselves on it a lot. The fact that we apply our reason to religion in ways that other faiths may not. And sometimes as we apply our intellect, we have lost sight of the truth that there are different kinds of knowing, that mind and spirit can exist just fine together. And so these are a couple of reminders to us. First one is about a bad car accident. A woman is lying in the street, covered with blood. And someone in the crowd shouts, call a priest. And the woman says, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. So the person says, oh, call a math teacher. And the other one's about something that happened in Boston, one of those big old churches there. And a man was making a ruckus in the back pew. After every sentence that the minister spoke, the man would shout, Amen, Hallelujah, and was waving his arms and yelling around. And one of the ushers approached the man, and he spoke to him discreetly. He said, Sir, we don't do things like that here. The man said, Yeah, but I got religion. And the usher said, You didn't get it here. Before we leave jokes that deal directly with religion, it's always instructive to look at the bloopers among church bulletins. Once in this very church, some years ago now, we were in the Presbyterian Church, so that was 1997, we had an order of service that was supposed to list that we were going to sing the song Simple Gifts, and our then office manager, Ann, accidentally typed, and I didn't catch it in the proofreading, 'Tis a gift to be single. I wish we had saved you. Maybe we have. Here are some others. Weight Watchers will meet at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. Please use the large double door at the side entrance. Speaking as a Weight Watcher. The church will host an evening of fine dining, super entertainment, and gracious hostility. 8 new choir robes are currently needed due to the addition of several new members and the deterioration of some of the older ones. Please place your donation in the envelope along with the deceased person you want remembered. Now, some jokes don't actually address religiously significant issues like death, pride, and the human position in the universe. Some jokes are just funny because they have an unexpected twist that makes us laugh. Laughing together is itself a religious activity, binding us in shared experience in shared awareness of the absurdity of the human condition. Think of the Dalai Lama, if you've ever seen him, how he cracks up when he's answering these hard questions. He just laughs. The Hindu elephant god, Ganesha, so cheerful. Or all of those laughing Buddhas. Some things are just funny. Now, this one came from a great book that's called Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar, which teaches philosophical concepts, real ones, and uses jokes to illustrate it. There's an old cowboy who goes into the bar and sits down and orders a drink, and he sits there sipping his whiskey, and a young lady comes up and sits next to him. She turns to him and says, "Are you a real cowboy?" He says, "Well, I've spent my whole life on the ranch, herding horses, mending fences, and branding cattle, so I guess I am." "Yeah, what are you?" She says, "I'm a lesbian. I spend my whole day thinking about women. As soon as I get up in the morning, I think about women. When I shower or watch TV, everything seems to make me think about women." And then she leaves to go about her business. A little while later, a couple sits down next to the old cowboy and says, "Are you a real cowboy?" And he says, "Well, I always thought I was, but I just found out that I'm a lesbian." Something that often makes me laugh is what happens to our well-intentioned efforts to translate one language into another. The results really let us know how profound can be the differences among us, even when we think we're talking about the same thing. The Dairy Association's huge success with the campaign Got Milk? You remember that one? We've all seen that. It prompted them to extend their advertising to Mexico, but it had to be brought to their attention that the Spanish translation actually said, "Are you lactating?" And Pepsi's come alive with a Pepsi generation in Chinese, translated into, "Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the grave." And Frank Perdue's chicken slogan, "It takes a strong man to make a tender chicken," was translated into Spanish so it said, "It takes an aroused man to make a chicken affectionate." Really have to be careful of those. And there's a category of funny because unexpected that go by the unpronounceable name, if I'm saying it even remotely right, of paraprosdokians. They're a lot better than their name. And they make us think, because the second part doesn't follow the first in the way that we think it will. And let's keep in mind that part of the reason why we follow a religious or spiritual path is to have our world shaken up, to stay on the cutting edge of our perceptions so that we may continue to grow. So being surprised is not such a bad thing. A clear conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory. The last thing I want to do is hurt you, but it's still on the list. Now that's borderline mean-spirited. That's the only one in this whole sermon like that. This one bemuses me terribly. There's a fine line between cuddling and holding someone down so they can't get away. When tempted to fight fire with fire, remember that the fire department usually uses water. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in the fruit salad. And the final category of jokes returns us to what day it is. April Fool's Day. In ancient stories, in Shakespeare, in religious tales, and in modern kid jokes, the fool ends up being the wise person. The naive, ignorant, unsophisticated person speaks, and a new light is cast on things. when some children were given the beginning of common sayings and asked to finish them, they came up with some pretty paraprosdokian-like wisdom. Don't bite the hand that looks dirty. Good advice. I like this little budding feminist. A miss is as good as a mister. The pen is mightier than the pigs. Get it? Pigs, pen? Okay. A bird in the hand is going to poop on you. Don't put off till tomorrow what you put on to go to bed. And when the blind lead the blind, get out of the way. Okay, here are some second graders' answers to questions about the very important issue of moms. And remembering that we laugh at these because the same reason that we have stories about fools, that these children say things that are true lots of times. Why did God make mothers? She's the only one who knows where the scotch tape is. What ingredients are mothers made of? God makes mothers out of clouds and angel hair and everything nice in the world and one dab of mean. Another answer to that one is, they had to get their start from men's bones and then they mostly use string, I think. What kind of a little girl was your mom? I don't know, because I wasn't there, but my guess would be pretty bossy. I think my children said that one, actually. What did mom need to know about dad before she married him? And there are three answers to this one. His last name. She had to know his background, like, is he a crook? Does he get drunk on beer? Good things to know. And the third one is, does he make at least $800 a year? Did he say no to drugs and yes to chores? I think those are pretty good standards, actually. What would it take to make your mom perfect? On the inside, she's already perfect. Outside, I think some kind of plastic surgery. If you could change one thing about your mom, what would it be? There's two answers to that. She has this weird thing about me keeping my room clean. I'd get rid of that. And the second one is, I'd like for her to get rid of those invisible eyes in the back of her head. We know about those. And the last one is, why did your mom marry your dad? She got too old to do anything else with him. Sometimes our little fools unconsciously make pretty startling commentaries on church. This one is about the pastor, probably the very same one who said, where is God? And he was saying, dear Lord, waving his arms, face upturned, without you we are but dust. And he was about to go on until a little girl said really loudly, Mommy, what is but dust? And there's this one, which I'm assuming didn't come from our church. A mother was asking her children, when they're on the way to church, why is it necessary to be quiet in church? And she said, oh, because people are sleeping. Which does happen sometimes. And finally, we return to our Unitarian Universalist proud use of reason in the pursuit of our religion. Apparently, we adults pass this on to our kids. It seems that one of our now high school or junior high school age youth, when they were about 9 years old, her mother asked her what she'd learned in Sunday school. Well, Mom, our teacher told us how God sent Moses behind enemy lines on a rescue mission to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. When he got to the Red Sea, he had his army build a pontoon bridge and the people all walked across it, and then he sent bombers to blow up the bridge and all the Israelites were saved. Mother thought for a minute and she said, is that really what your teacher taught you? Well, no. But if I told it the way the teacher did, you'd never believe it.